As promised, we have some conversation for you here leading up to the quiz question at 12:30 today, and my guest today is going to be performing in Madison tonight with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. It's a program that has a variety of old and very new things. The Haydn Clock Symphony will be on the program tonight, and this is all at the Overture Center in Madison, as will Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto in E minor, which is one of the most famous of all violin concertos. And then it's not billed exactly as a violin concerto, but a work called Elements, and it's in four movements, understandably, and that too is of sorts a violin concerto, like the Mendelssohn, to be played by my guest today. Her name is Karina Kanellakis, and welcome.
Thank you.
You're not just a violinist. You're actually also the assistant conductor of the Dallas Symphony. Now, how did all that come about?
Well, it's a big honor to have that position. I was just appointed very recently, and I will start officially next season. I just had my debut down there in February, and I will conduct another couple of concerts in June with the Dallas Symphony. And then as of September, I will be living there and in residence with the orchestra.
Moving from New York?
Yes.
So full-time position?
Yes, it's a big job. It's a big responsibility. And I will be responsible for conducting youth programs, POPs concerts, helping to prepare certain subscription programs. And I'll be the cover conductor for the big subscription weeks with the music director, Jaap van Zweden, who also was a violinist and a concertmaster, so I'm looking forward to getting to know him, and it's really very, very exciting for me.
This is a time when so many symphonies seem to be in some distress. How are things going in Dallas?
I think they have everything under control. It's an amazing orchestra, and just so much refinement and beauty, the way they play. And the organization is really wonderful, and everyone that I've met there in the administration, they're just the most hospitable, warm people.
And how is this position as assistant conductor of the Dallas Symphony, how is that going to affect your solo career?
Well, for the time being, I will have less time to practice. I'll be really busy down there. I also have a few guest conductor weeks with other orchestras next year. But I will also find time to play and continue to play concerts here and there. And we'll see how long I end up staying in Dallas. I assistant conductor positions don't last forever.
Really?
And, well, usually they're 2 to 3 years. This is standard sort of, it really depends on the orchestra, and I sort of can't predict the future at this point.
Why would these positions be so temporary?
I think that for any young conductor to have an opportunity like this is a really big deal. The orchestra is putting a tremendous amount of trust in you.
Sure.
You are responsible for not only preparing the orchestra and being a constant presence in the city and for the players, but you're also responsible for showing progress as a young conductor and learning from the experience. And I think that assistant conductor positions are a huge opportunity to learn and to observe the music director, observe how they rehearse, how to interact with an orchestra, how to interact with board members, with the administration, with negotiations, with the entire culture of an orchestra. So what happens very often with assistant conductors is that they learn very quickly and end up getting an orchestra of their own. And then they go on to, or they go on and get very busy guest conducting. And then the position will be available to the next young conductor who's ready and who needs that opportunity.
Is there an orchestra that you would particularly like to conduct after Dallas?
Well, I mean, I'm just working very hard right now, and I hope to continue to be given opportunities. I feel really fortunate and lucky that so soon after sort of deciding to commit to conducting, I already have a lot of work with really tremendous orchestras. So I will work as hard as I can and hope that that continues.
There's a lot to being a leader, isn't it? That's what the conductor really is. I mean, you have to deal with any kind of situations and personalities that might detract from the performance.
Definitely. You have to definitely be in charge, but also and sometimes be a mediator. But I think also, especially in an assistant conductor position where you are there all the time, there's definitely a collegial aspect to it. You are one of the group, and it's your responsibility to really get to know the orchestra and to know the players and to be able to interact also on a social level with everyone, and not, you know, you're not the big maestro coming in and telling everyone what to do. And anyway, that model of a conductor, sort of the Toscanini model, has long died a long time ago.
Concept, yeah.
Yeah, sure. That's not really the way it works, especially in America. It's much more of a sort of chamber music like.
More democratic.
Yes, definitely.
Well, as the assistant conductor, do you actually play as a member of the orchestra routinely, or are you apart from that?
So when there are the big subscription weeks and the music director is conducting, you are sitting in the hall with the score. You are responsible for being ready to conduct the piece if anything happens to, if he gets sick.
Which happens.
If it does happen, if he's stuck in traffic and you have to conduct the overture, which has happened.
Is that right?
there are a whole number of things that can happen, and conducting takes a tremendous amount of energy and stamina. And so if you're not feeling well, you can't do it. And so people do cancel, and people do have reasons that they can't get up there. And that's when, as the assistant or the cover conductor, you have to really be ready at any moment to jump in.
That would be sort of, in a way, doubly tough, wouldn't it? Because you, unlike the conductor who's been working with the orchestra, you know, directly, say, through the whole course of preparing for a particular concert, you're sort of having to get up to speed from 0 to 60 in a very short period of time if you are asked suddenly to fill in.
Yes. It's very difficult because a lot of this repertoire is new to you as a young conductor, is new to me. I'm lucky that I've played a lot of the standard orchestral repertoire as a violinist. So I have a certain kind of familiarity with the standard orchestral repertoire, you know, Beethoven symphonies, Mahler symphonies, Bruckner symphonies. But it's very different to play a piece in the violin section and to study the score and know the score and know the piece. It takes a tremendous amount of time just at your desk, at home, at the piano, playing the harmonies, studying the structure of the piece, the form, the instrumentation.
Not to mention the feeling.
Absolutely. Your interpretation of the work. What does it mean? What did the composer want? And you're doing all of this cerebrally, and you're analyzing the piece purely from your imagination, and you are anticipating what the problems will be based on your knowledge of the way an orchestra works. And the hard thing as the cover conductor is that you don't actually have the benefit of that first rehearsal where you can work out the kinks and see what it actually feels like. You're watching someone else do it. And if that weekend you happen to jump in, you're in the concert under the pressure, conducting that piece for the very first time, and you have to make the orchestra feel at ease and that they can trust you.
Yes, not just you have to be at ease, but you have to make them comfortable.
Yes, they need to feel that you are there for them, that you will cue anyone who needs a cue, that the tempos are exactly the tempi that they expected during the rehearsal period. And so your ears, when you're sitting there with the score in those rehearsals, your ears have to be just sweating. You know, you have to listen so carefully and mark down anything you can to try to get the piece really into your blood.
Well, these pieces that you're going to be playing tonight with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, it's a little unusual, isn't it, for the solos? I mean, typically there would be the solo piece, say, in the middle of a set of three pieces in a concert. In this case, you're playing both of the first two, and both of these are actually, in their way, violin concertos.
Yes, giant concertos. Two giant concertos back to back. Yeah, it's Andrew Sewell, the conductor tonight. He and I performed Vivaldi Four Seasons together a couple of seasons ago with the Illinois Symphony, and we just absolutely loved working together. And I just think he's really wonderful. And when he asked me to do this, I didn't even think about it. I just said yes, absolutely. And he said, "There's this piece by Michael McLean, and it's called Elements, and it's sort of a modern day Vivaldi Four Seasons. It has, you know, four movements: earth, fire, air, and water. And would you be interested in doing it along with the Mendelssohn?" I said, "Well, that's a lot of playing, but yes, definitely." And so I'm really looking forward to it. It's the McLean is absolutely gorgeous.
And in some ways, as I say, it's similar to the Mendelssohn. You're going to demonstrate that. You brought your violin, which is
great. I have my violin. Both concertos took a few years to actually be completed.
Sure.
So McLean, I think, began the first movement, which is Earth, in, I think, 1997, and then he put it to rest, and the concerto wasn't completed until 2005, and it wasn't recorded until 2007, and he was working with, Michael himself is a violinist, but Brian Lewis, who is also a friend of mine, we went to festivals together for many years, he also helped Michael, and Michael even said to him, "I don't know how you play Fire, because it's so difficult. I can't play it." And that was a similar situation with the Mendelssohn Concerto, because Mendelssohn was at the time the conductor of the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, and we're talking about in the 1830s and 40s, and the concertmaster of the orchestra was Ferdinand David, who Mendelssohn wrote the piece for him, and Mendelssohn also could play the violin. He was a violinist, but not at all on the level of Ferdinand David. And so they worked together for about 6 years, and Mendelssohn really agonized over making sure, revising and re-revising. I came across a Baehrenreiter edition of the concerto where there were actually was one of the earlier versions was in there, and you can tell that he really gave it a lot of thought and gave sort of the how violinistic it was, meaning how sort of well it sits in the instrument.
Sure.
And I think that's why the concerto has remained one of the standard violin concertos for every violinist. It's your bread and butter, along with Beethoven, Brahms, and Tchaikovsky.
A little anomalous compared to them in that the violin is right there from the get-go.
Yes,
a big,
yes.
Long orchestral intro.
Yes, exactly. It was very unusual at the time to just start right off with the theme, and that theme, I can play it for you. That theme, he also agonized over that opening theme and said it just gave him no peace. It was going over and over in his mind. And so I'll just play that. That's the opening theme, and the concerto has another unusual aspect, which is that the cadenza was, you know, in classical concertos, the cadenza was a chance for the soloist to
show off,
exactly, and improvise and do their thing, and every soloist would put his stamp on it. But Mendelssohn actually wrote it out, and not only is the cadenza written out seamlessly, but the entire concerto was written out seamlessly, and the first movement connects right into the second movement, which then connects right into when the second movement ends, there's a little sort of recitativo section, as you would have in an opera aria, that lasts just for about a minute. And
then you're into that, right?
I can play that. So
this is what will get us into the third movement.
The third movement. And the orchestra comes in very loudly, and we're not exactly sure in that recitative where we're going, because the concerto is in E minor, but the last movement is like so many works of Mendelssohn has this effervescent light quality to it, and it's a scherzo, and it's happy and it's carefree.
Well. About this other piece you're playing. And by the way, is this the violin that you'll be using tonight?
Yes, this is a Montegazza Italian violin from 1782. And it's been on loan to me, on generous loan to me for about 8 years now from a private person. And I absolutely adore this instrument.
Well, they need to be played.
They do. And I really feel like it's my voice, and I just absolutely love this violin.
And it's suitable both for the Mendelssohn and for this Michael McLean piece that was written in the last 10-15 years.
Yes, the McLean has a very romantic element to it, so it's not a contemporary work in the sense that you might have heard in the 1970s and 80s when there was the serial movement.
Sure.
In fact, I think McLean really kind of despised that and rebelled against it.
A lot of composers are. I mean, it really has, I think, faded in favor of
definitely
a more melodic approach to classical music.
Absolutely. I think the 21st century composers now are really moving into also a lot of crossover.
Oh, for sure.
Genre.
So which genres does the elements cross over into?
Well, there's definitely a strong influence of minimalism. So the last movement, for example, which is Water, has this figure in it. And that is that's how it starts off, and it continues. The orchestra continues that three note and then also four note motive, which is it's very repetitive. And that's minimalism. The idea of minimalism is that you repeat the same figure over and over again and sort of go into a trance like state.
Let's face it, Richard Strauss, you mentioned he did that with his Metamorphosen, and other mm-hmm. composers have tinkered with it even. I mean, there are times when Chopin even sounds a little that way, or Brahms.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, every good composer will have a motive and various different motives in the work that tie it together. I think in minimalism, what happens is that comes to the forefront. You hear it. It's not in the texture. It's very present and audible.
And so other aspects of this, this actually, like the Mendelssohn, this McLean elements, does it have a cadenza?
It does. Yeah, I can play the opening cadenza. That's another thing that's unusual about the McLean is the first movement, which is Earth, starts off with a beautiful orchestral introduction. And then the violin comes in and right away has a cadenza, which I can play.
And this is this is in the Earth movement?
Yes, that's right at the beginning of the concerto.
The concerto starts with a cadenza.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
The orchestra plays a few bars first, and then right off the bat, there's this cadenza.
Is there any other concerto that does that? Usually it's the end of the first movement, isn't it?
Yes, usually it's the end of the first movement, although after Mendelssohn wrote his cadenza, which actually leads you into the recapitulation in the Mendelssohn played by the orchestra. Other composers started to follow suit. Tchaikovsky also wrote out his cadenza right in the middle of the movement before the development. Sibelius also used it as a way of leading into the recapitulation. So it's something that became popular to have the cadenza in the middle of the movement. But the beginning, very beginning, that's quite rare, I think.
Well, let me ask you this then. In closing, if you've done your show of skill at the very beginning of the concerto, where do you go from there?
Well, I wouldn't say it's the show of skill. I think the fire movement is unbelievably virtuosic and flashy and very, very difficult. And then the air movement is so beautiful, just really, really ethereal and really actually brings tears to my eyes when I listen to the recording. I think the air movement is my favorite movement. And then water, the last movement, is quite long and nonstop playing and very, very difficult with lots of double stops and arpeggios and swirling sort of arpeggio, water-like arpeggios. So I would say the cadenza at the beginning is just a taste of what's to come, actually.
Well, thanks for sharing some of those insights into these works. And is there a commercially available recording of the MacLean, of the Elements?
There is. Brian Lewis recorded it with the London Symphony and Hugh Wolf conducting, which I believe is available on iTunes. You can purchase that recording.
Actually, I think we're going to be hearing a little bit of that shortly.
Great.
After I ask the quiz question. So, to recapitulate here, my guest for this portion of the midday has been Karina Kanellakis. She is in the process of moving from New York, which is where you're from. That's the hometown.
Yep, that's my hometown.
To Dallas, where she has recently been appointed the assistant conductor of the Dallas Symphony, and she's going to be performing tonight in Madison, 8 o'clock,
yes,
with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra at the Overture Center for the Arts. Not one, but two violin concertos, full-sized ones at that, too. Michael MacLean's Elements and Felix Mendelssohn's landmark violin concerto in E minor, and also on the program tonight, Haydn's Clock Symphony. Thanks for stopping by and sharing some music.
Thank you. My pleasure.